And our next guest does something as a volunteer that for many people would be too difficult to bear. She sits with hospital patients as they're dying. She's part of a program called No One Dies Alone that ensures that terminal patients aren't by themselves when they pass away. It started in Eugene, Oregon in 2001, and now volunteers can be found in hospitals across the country. Marilyn Judson volunteers at the Santa Monica UCLA Hospital in California. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for the invitation.
And how did you first find out about this program and decide that you wanted to volunteer to sit with people and be with people as they're dying?
I first heard about it on NPR about 8 or 10 years ago. And then when it came to UCLA in 2014, I immediately wanted to be part of it. But I understand it was started by a woman named Sandra Clark, who was an ICU nurse and just felt heartbroken one night when she was not able to stay with a patient who had asked her to stay with him because he felt he was near death. And she said, "I'll come back as soon as I've done my rounds." And by the time she got back, he had passed away. So apparently from that night on, she started organizing her coworkers, and eventually it spread to the community, and they elicited volunteer help to let no one die alone.
So tell us what it's like to do it, to sit with somebody as they're dying.
Most of the patients with whom I've sat have been non-responsive. In other words, they don't open their eyes, they don't speak, but we're told that the last senses to go at the time of death are hearing and touch. So our training involves letting them know what we're doing, giving them information. "Hi, this is Marilyn. I'm here to just keep you company. I'm a volunteer with the hospital, and I'll be here holding your hand and letting me, moistening your lips or whatever it looks like you may need." And then from there, I often, if I've had permission from the nurses or the family, I often lift my golden retriever therapy dog, Frank, up onto the bed with them. First put down a clean sheet and then left Frank up next to them so he's kind of lying along their side. So that gives this soft, warm animal presence next to them.
Do they react to that?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah, there was one patient, Robert, who had cancer. This is several years ago. And I came to his room several times while he was still responsive in my role in the UCLA People-Animal Connection, which is just simply visit with a dog from patient to patient, whoever the nurses recommend or whoever has requested it. And Robert refused me not once, not twice, but I think three times. He said he just had too much to do. There was too much going on. And I found out later from the palliative care nurses that he was calling every available specialist and trying every possible way to avoid accepting the terminal diagnosis that he had been given. Not that I don't believe in trying every option available, but there are some people that do not go gentle into that good night, and Robert was one of those. By the time I came the fourth time, so this would be 4 weeks after I first met Robert, he was basically non-responsive. So I talked with the nurses, and I said, "Do you think this might be helpful? He has refused me before," and they encouraged me to visit him with my golden retriever. So I went into the room, put down the sheet on Robert's bed, and then lifted Frank up onto his bed so he was lying kind of along his thigh and his calf. And this man hadn't said anything for several days, hadn't opened his eyes, but as soon as Frank was in position next to him, he did open his eyes and looked down towards his legs, saw Frank, and said, Oh, how wonderful.
Hmm.
So I sat there with him and held his hand. And Frank, who is the most patient animal I've ever met, he was just immobile during that time. I've seen him do this with several patients that are near the end. We sat there for 2 hours.
Hmm.
And I like to think it comforted him. When I was first visiting him, there was a lot of anxiety in the room, a lot of tension in the room. But after I'd been there with Frank for a short while, the atmosphere lightened. And I think Frank and I were helpful to him. I held his hand. What I often do is I hold the patient's hand, and then if they're responsive, I ask their permission. If they're not, I just quietly repeat some phrases for their well-being that go along the lines of, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering, may you be at ease, may you be free. And I keep repeating those phrases in my mind, usually directing them to the patient, but every once in a while, if I feel like I'm becoming overwhelmed, I'll direct them to myself silently and maybe stroke the patient's head during some of that or just continue to hold his or her hand. And what those phrases do is they keep me in the room. They keep my mind from wandering.
Hmm.
They keep me focused on this drama that is taking place in front of me. This person is soon to die.
Well, and a lot of people would find it very difficult to do what you do. They don't want to be around death. They're afraid of it. They don't want to witness it. Has that ever been a problem for you?
Sure. There's much about death that's frightening. I'm fond of saying it's this culture's last taboo.
Hmm.
But, you know, we do all have the same path. In spite of all evidence to the contrary, we like to think that each of us, especially if you're American, is going to live forever. And it's not the case. There's always been something mysterious to me. It's been a poignant mystery ever since I was a child about death. And I've long wanted to understand it better, to explore it, to just... There's something about being in a room with a dying person that's on the edge of that frontier, the edge of that unknown country, that's like looking into the eye of God. It's just a sacred time. And I feel, in spite of how unpleasant it might be in some cases, I feel privileged. I feel privileged to be there and to be helping with this passage.
And it's not emotionally draining for you?
It's very emotionally draining, and I do it again in a minute.
Hmm.
It's both heart-wrenching and soul-filling at the same time.
How many people have you sat with while they were dying?
Oh, I'd say maybe 15 or 20 over the last several years. And when I finish, often I'm drained. And I'll call a friend, or I'll just go home and hug my husband and hug Frank. And after a little while, I feel okay again. But I turn down very few of the calls that we get when someone is close to dying and they don't have any friends or family around them. I usually make an effort to go in because I... Like I said, I think it's a privilege, and also I know how much I would want that for myself. My mother ended up dying without either myself or my dad at the bedside. This is probably part of what motivates me in this program. And fortunately, there was a nurse there, Kathy, who held her hand the last several minutes of her life and said, your husband loves you, your daughter loves you. And that was a great comfort to me, and I like to think it was a comfort to my mother as she took her last few breaths. So I guess I do it partly for that, and then just sometimes when I'm with a patient, I'm aware they're dying, and then it makes my own life more precious. I'm simultaneously aware of the gift of my own life and the crushing sadness of eventually losing that life. And it's because life is framed by death, that if you really face that, really accept it, internalize it, then every moment of life becomes more poignant, more precious, less likely to waste it on trivia.
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing as a volunteer for No One Dies Alone in California. It sounds like a great program. Marilyn Judson, we really appreciate you talking to us about it.
Thank you for inviting me. Thanks for thinking of the Santa Monica UCLA Hospital.